Casey Corcoran Podcast.
Thank you. You guys are very, very nice. I had a nice flight in. Didn't land in the Hudson or anything, but... How about Captain Sullenberger, huh? Man, a hero? But he's not allowed to think that he's a hero. That's one of the rules about being a hero. You're not allowed to think you're one. They have to ask you if you think you're one, and you have to say no. And then everything's good. You think you're a hero, Captain Sullenberger? No. I don't think I'm a hero. Good. He's a hero who don't even think that he's a hero. What a hero! All's good in the world. I think it would be okay to admit it. It was kind of obvious. Captain Sullenberger, do you think you're a hero? Yes. Did you see the footage of that plane coming in? You have any idea how hard that was? Wings level, nose up, tail down. I'm a hero. Because I saved everybody's life. I'm going to get a cape. I was watching the news that night, and it was amazing. They had the footage of the plane in the water with all the people out on the wings. They go back to the newsroom, and a news anchor said, "Can you imagine a better ending to this story?" Landing in Charlotte with luggage and dry socks.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Monday, October 17th, 2022. 22 days until the beginning of the end of our democracy. But why focus on that here on a Monday morning? How you doing, kids? It's JC. Weather's going to be the big story here for the next couple of days. Very, very windy. Very windy. And then a hard freeze is coming your way for the next couple of days, and then things will sort of moderate toward the end of the week, but this is going to be cold stuff. Now, again, you will be reminded many, many times over the course of the next 2 days that you got to shut your water off, go on an outside hose and stuff like that. I did that 1 year when I was living in this house in Chesterfield. This was my second house. This would have been 1987, I believe. And the thing about it is when you break a pipe, you don't know about it until you turn on the water the next spring. And sure enough, I did. And all of a sudden, there's water shooting all over the basement. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then I realized, ooh, I did that dumb thing you're not supposed to do. You forgot to shut off the water. That was the place where the guy who had owned the home before I moved in had put in one of those softening water things, one of those big tank, and then there were big bags of salt or some sort of salt-like solution that you were supposed to pour in this thing and it would keep the water soft. You know, the only problem is, I don't know about you, but I had that water softening thing, and I never felt like I was getting the soap off my body when I would shower. It just felt sort of, I don't want to say slimy, but slick. And I finally just disconnected the thing because it was like, I'll go with the hard water. I don't even know really what the advantage of soft water is. All I know is I didn't like it. Now, I had an aunt and uncle, a couple of cousins, who, you know, back in the 60s when I was a little boy, they lived way out in the country. You know, my grandmother was like that, too. She lived almost at the Wisconsin border in northern Illinois, and it was out in the country. And she had a party line, and she had, what was the other thing? Oh, a septic tank. And the water there apparently was so hard and needed to be treated in some way or you would have had big problems. So I can understand that, but I don't think you need it in Chesterfield. But that's just me. How about Harrison Bader? Look at this. You know, they traded him to the Yankees at a time where he wasn't healthy. And we got Montgomery out of the deal, and people in New York are like, we got robbed, we got robbed. Now all of a sudden it's like, ha ha, we took you. You know, sports fans are bad enough. Sports fans in New York? No, thank you. Major League Baseball playoffs over the weekend. Padres eliminated the Dodgers to advance the National League Championship Series against the Phillies, who knocked off the Braves. Astros swept the Mariners to punch their ticket to the ALCS, where they're going to play the winner of tonight's Yankees-Guardians game. It's not a Game 7, it's Game 5, but it's the equivalent of a Game 7 because of the shorter series. So this is going up against Monday Night Football tonight. It'd be interesting to see how this plays out. Tom Brady yelling at his offensive line during the game. Lost to the Steelers yesterday. You're not going to believe this, but in the post-game interview, he said, we got to play better. Meanwhile, University of Tennessee started a fundraiser to replace the goalposts that were torn down when the fans rushed the field after the Vols upset Alabama on Saturday, and it seems to be working. People are donating money. It was on this date in 1994. We were working at, I'm trying to remember if it had converted to the river yet. It started as the Fox and then became the River, and I think everybody remembers that radio station with all that Paula Cole and Sarah McLachlan music. I got trapped over there for the better part of 2 years, and let me just tell you. The guy running the place, they had brought him in from California, and he brought with him some girl out of Orlando, Florida, and he put her on the midday show, and pretty soon we noticed that she seemed to be running the station instead of the guy who was supposed to be running the station. And then as we watched a little more clearly, it became obvious that these two people were playing a house. And this guy had a wife and a family in Los Angeles, and everybody knew it, but it was very, very clear that was going on. It was like a quid pro quo. It's like, here, I'll give you this radio station and you can run it in exchange for some games of hide the salami on demand. And she was going out like almost every night with the record company people. The record guys would come into St. Louis and wine and dine the two of these people. And the next thing I knew is, you know, they would come back from one of these big all-night record company creep fests, and all of a sudden we would notice that we were playing all these songs from people we had never even heard of, and songs that were not any good. And that's the way it worked for a while at that radio station, because that's what the record company's guy's job is. It's like, get these radio stations to play these songs. It's like, who's gonna play the Swinging Stakes? And if you think I'm making that up, I'm not. That was the name of the band, the Swinging Stakes. And they put out an album. That was bad. On Tuesday, we were doing that Two for Tuesdays thing. So now it's not bad enough. You're playing the Swinging Stakes. Now you're playing them two in a row. Here's two from the Swinging Stakes. Enjoy the next 10 minutes of completely obscure music. But don't worry, because after we play those two Swinging Stakes songs, we might lose you, but we'll be right back with two from Michelle Shocked. This is what it was like at that radio station until I finally left, and then they moved the broadcast hour so you could actually hear the station. And then, you know, Trish and all those people came aboard, and suddenly they made it into a halfway decent radio station, as long as the people you were attempting to reach knew about the radio station. You know the girls I'm talking about. It was a female-targeted radio station to those 27-year-old girls who have a cigarette and a Diet Coke for lunch and who went to the Lilith Fair. And you've heard me talk about the Lilith Fair before. You would go to the show, it would be Sarah McLachlan and Paula Cole. I don't want to wait for my life to be over. And then, oh yeah, 4 9 Blondes. I say, and these girls would go to the show, but it was all women, so they had to buy their own ticket, and then they had to pay for their own parking, and then when they went to the show, they wanted a little glass of wine or a beer or something, they had to pay for it themselves. And here's a little news headline, Women don't like to do that. They like to have their husbands and their boyfriends pay for the parking and the ticket and the beer at the show. And so that was pretty much the end of that. Because the women are standing there going, what the fuck is this? I'm paying for everything. Forget this. And then most of those artists, those female artists, just sort of burned out. When's the last time you heard the name Paula Cole? When's the last time you heard, who was that chick who sang Sunny Came Home? And then four non-talents. And there might be some women who are listening to this right now going, JC, that's awfully harsh. Yeah, it is. It's also 100% true. So sometimes things do get harsh around here. This is the anniversary of a movie called Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, a tribute to Chuck Berry. And thousands of people were invited into the Fox. Well, we're invited. You got to buy a ticket. But you got to buy a ticket to the Fox Theater. I remember broadcasting live and the whole thing beforehand. And then I emceed Taylor Hackford, the director. He was the guy that made An Officer and a Gentleman. So people were a little surprised when they're like, we want to make a documentary, a concert film with Chuck Berry in St. Louis with Keith Richards and Linda Ronstadt and just, you know, a dozen or so major names from primarily the 50s and 60s, people who understood what the presence of Chuck Berry in the music industry, especially back then, meant to all of them. They shot this film and it was released as a motion picture. I don't know how many people actually saw it, but it was a story within a story, because on one hand, well, there was a story inside of a story inside of a story inside of a story. First of all, people who came to the show, I'm talking about the audience, they're like, wait a minute, we thought we were coming to a concert. And it's like, no, you're coming to watch the making of a movie. And that's when you realize how dull the filmmaking business is, because it was not uncommon for them to shoot a scene, something goes wrong, or they just didn't like the angle, or the sound wasn't what they wanted it to be, or whatever. So got to do that again. And now people are watching going, what the fuck is this? And why are we sitting here for 20 minutes with nothing happening? But when the music was actually playing, you know, when they were actually doing like the concert footage, it was really, really cool. But I got out of there at about, it had to be 1:30 in the morning, and they weren't even close to wrapping up. I handed things off to Drew Johnson, and I just said, you do it, you take it from here, doing the stage announcements and the emceeing and stuff. I got a show to do tomorrow morning, and I'm toasted. But I'll probably post this on Facebook later, you know, what one of the things that was happening. Again, this is 1986, so there were things like, you know, telegrams and letters. And part of my duty was to go up on stage in between the action, as it were, and read so many of these letters and telegrams and things like that that had been sent in. And I would read them, and you know, one was from the president, and one was from this guy, and one was from this guy. And I would read each one and then put it in a big stack, and that was the end of it. There was one that somehow mysteriously ended up in my coat pocket and followed me home. Mom, it followed me home. Can I keep it? And that was the letter from Mick Jagger. And maybe it was a terrible thing to do, but I lifted it. I figured I'm not getting paid for this, so I'll take this, you know, in lieu of actually receiving monetary funds. So I took that letter, and that is hanging on my wall here, and I've made copies, and maybe I'll put one up later. But it was a handwritten letter from Jagger, and I have the original, and the rest is history. But all that happening on this date back in 1986, 1994. We get a call from some very nice people over in Collinsville, Illinois. And they're like, look, you know, we got the giant ketchup water tower out here, and it's a big tourist attraction. And there's probably not a lot else going on in Collinsville to bring people here in terms of tourism. So we really need to take care of this thing. But here's the thing. It hasn't been painted in like 30 years, and it's chipping, and it's starting to look a little ragged and ugly. And we're trying to raise money to be able to paint this water tower and make it pretty again. And we said, sure, we'll help you out with that. So we scheduled a live broadcast from the water tower there in Collinsville, right at the base of the whole thing. And a couple of things happened that morning. First of all, we called up the record company of REM, because Michael Stipe from REM is from Collinsville. A lot of people don't remember that, or didn't even know it to begin with. And we figured maybe he would help out in some way. And we sort of sent a letter along with an explanation. Yeah, they're trying to get money to be able to paint the water tower here. And if you could send a message along, we could play that on the air. And maybe it would compel people to donate some money, whatever. to our surprise, a couple of weeks later, a little reel of tape shows up, and it's Michael Stipe, believe it or not. The only problem is he misunderstood, and he thought that they were going to... He didn't understand that they were trying to get money to paint it. And so the message was something along the lines of, I still have it somewhere in my archives, but it was somewhere in the vicinity of, don't tear down the water tower, the ketchup bottle water tower. Don't tear that down. We're like, I'm not tearing it down. Like, well, we had a little fun playing it. So that was the first thing that happened. Second thing that happened was that the Wiener Wagon showed up that week. So now we're broadcasting from the base of the ketchup bottle in Collegeville, and the Wiener Wagon shows up. So that was cool. Third thing that happened was Trish Brown, a little tiny 5 foot tall weather forecaster on Channel 4, used to do our show back then, and we were like, it would be nice if you could come out. I know that you have a full-time job in the radio thing. You're just doing sort of on the side, but people would like to see you. We would like to see you. You know, we talk to you every day, but it's just on a phone line, and that's not like having you here. And come on, Trish, come on by. Well, she was very nice enough to do so. But this is when everybody figured, I got a couple of pictures of this, and if I can find these, I'll put them up too. This is when we realized the difference between dressing for being on TV and just dressing the way you would dress on a Thursday morning if you had to get up and drive to Collinsville. And even though I worked with Trish at the television station every day, I just never really noticed how built she was. And so she shows up in a pair of jeans and this skin-tight white top with a sweater over it, but the sweater was open, and we were like, holy shit, look at Trish Brown. And I have reason to believe she figured it out pretty quickly that we were staring at her boobs, and then she was a somewhat conservative young woman with no interest whatsoever in titillizing us. Pun intended. And so she covered up, and that was the end of that. And then just about the time we're getting ready to go home, the show's over, this guy who appeared to be about 75 years old shows up with a guitar.
Now I think we can say, ladies and gentlemen, here in Collinsville, Illinois, it's the Ketchup Bottle Song. Guys, take it away.
We all stood around and looked up in the sky at the mighty ketchup bottle, and all exclaimed, oh my. The tower that we looked at was so mighty grand, the greatest ketchup bottle ever seen throughout the land.
Hey!
Back in 49, they took a load of steel and made from it a bottle that looked so mighty real. When you look in your icebox, you'd really be at loss to tell the giant bottle from the one that held the sauce. Oh, we all stood around and looked up in the sky at the mighty ketchup bottle, and we all exclaimed, oh my. The tower that you looked at was so mighty grand, the greatest ketchup bottle ever seen throughout the land. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was quite a show. It was quite a show, all of that on this date. Back in 1994. All right, we got a bunch of stuff to play for you here. Clips from over the weekend. And one thing from last week, you know, we're getting closer and closer to Halloween, and the decorations are going up. Oh, no, that's not right, is it? If you go to the hardware store, you go to Lowe's, you go to Home Depot, and it's really Christmas there. I didn't see any Halloween stuff out. It was all Christmas. It's a winter wonderland at the hardware stores. Anyhow, with all that in mind, here's Seth Meyers from last week. You may have missed this.
So every year around this time, Fox News loves to get their viewers riled up with fake Halloween conspiracy theories, like when they claim people were swapping our kids' cheap candy with expensive weed gummies, or, you know, rainbow fentanyl is now a thing. But to keep things fresh, they've also come up with some new ones for 2022. We're going to run through them now in a segment called Fox News's Halloween Fearmongering. It's now Mrs. Goodbar. Biden wants to defund all kids dressed as police. There have been reports of needles found in apples. Even worse, the needles contain the vaccine. Mike and Ike are trying to adopt. 100 grand bars now cost 200 grand due to inflation. White chocolate has to pay reparations to all the other chocolates. Hot tamales are attempting to cross our border. Hershey's are now going by them days. You can't even dress your kid up as a Native American, Nazi, and blackface anymore without someone getting offended. Skittles Taste the Rainbow is liberal left-wing code for Skittles do gay stuff. If you watch Hocus Pocus 2, you die 7 days later, like that movie The Ring. Halloween mask mandates don't work. And finally, sugar daddies are grooming our Sour Patch Kids. This has been Fox News Halloween Fearmongering. We'll be right back with Caitlin Deaver.
Those closer look segments on Seth Meyers are extremely well written. Now, if you're a conservative or you're a Republican, you probably don't think they're that funny, but the rest of us do. All right, now, obviously, a lot of baseball on television these days. By now, you've probably already heard about this and probably already heard it too. Here's Bob Costas on the off chance that you missed this over the weekend.
And now he starts it for the Yanks at the bottom of the sixth. Justin Bieber just threw his 84th pitch. Trevor Stephan is up in the Cleveland bullpen. Did I actually call Shane Bieber Justin Bieber? How
not,
did
not the
I
first
vowed
time.
That would not happen. I'm sure it's not the first time it's happened in his life. I wonder if he's watching the game. Shane Bieber, ladies and gentlemen.
If you guys can name one Justin Bieber song, I give you $10.
Yummy.
Yes, Ron, yes.
You actually had a Justin Bieber song at the ready.
That's really funny. It's actually been a treat hearing Bob do baseball play-by-play. It's really, really been cool. All right. I don't know if you've experienced this. If you look at the traffic, it looks as bad as ever. I don't know. And I don't know if St. Louis is one of those cities who was so directly affected by stuff like this, because when you think of these massive traffic jams and you use the word gridlock, you're usually thinking about places like New York and San Francisco and LA and Chicago. But here's this great story they did on NBC last night. And by the way, this Maggie Vespa, I find her hideous looking. She looks like a cross between Megan Fox, Demi Moore, and that roommate your girlfriend had back in college that really hated you and was always telling your girlfriend to break up with you. That thing in her jaw, the thing in her jaw, and then her eyes narrow. I don't know, there's just something that creeps me out about this Maggie Vespa, which is too bad because she's actually a pretty good reporter, but when I see her on screen, it's like, ah! Anyhow, here's the report.
I probably don't need to tell you this, but gridlock traffic is back, and you may have noticed that as we come out of the pandemic, those brutal backups have become a bit more unpredictable, like Sundays. But now there's new data about when and where traffic jams are happening. Maggie Vespa now on the frustrating new normal.
It's where dreams die.
From coast to coast.
This is how LA rolls out the red carpet.
Seas of brake lights.
Driving 15 miles per hour on the highway.
And seething frustration.
It's a nightmare.
In the wake of peak COVID lockdowns, highways across the country are once again slammed by standstill traffic.
Some days I'm crying. Some days I'm, you know, cussing mad, swearing because I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe what I'm seeing.
The jarring jams enough to break Janice Scott.
That hyperbole, or have you actually cried?
I have actually cried.
The Chicago office manager's twice daily hour commute, a quintessential example of the Windy City's traffic rebound, ranked among the worst in the nation, with commute times up 24% in the last month, just behind New York, D.C., and Boston.
We collect about over 100 million data points every single day.
Chicago's Department of Transportation tracking traffic's return in real time.
We believe it's about 92% back to 2019 levels.
It's 92% back.
Yes.
But that headline, which no one disputes, comes with caveats. One tied to when people drive.
peak travel times are during the middle of the day now.
Peak travel times are seen throughout the day. That's because people who are working from remote locations are probably choosing to run errands in the middle of the day.
Another shift, mounting congestion, not downtown, but in the suburbs. Experts point to paramount changes in American life. 27.6 million people now working from home, triple pre-pandemic totals. And the way people choose to get to work has transformed. Public transit ridership plummeted by nearly half. In Chicago, urban planners are scrambling to find solutions, offering cheaper public transit fares and altering the timing of traffic signals to try and keep cars moving. But everyone we talked to said change will take time.
It sounds like you're saying we don't know if this is a new normal.
I think what I'm saying is we're in a new normal, but it could change.
A crushing status quo for Janice Scott.
Where you're just like, well, I just have to sit through this because, I mean, what other choice do I have?
Another trip home with drivers running on fumes. Maggie Vespa, NBC News, Chicago.
All right, two more good clips from over the weekend. Jonathan Carl, one of the really, really good reporters we have going right now, he works for ABC News, and he had Dr. Fauci on yesterday in one of those sort of long sit-down interviews.
But you shouldn't discount that it does afflict children, so it isn't without consequences. If you go back, and I ask anybody to go back over the number of times that I've said we've got to do everything we can to keep the schools open, no one plays that clip. They always come back and say Fauci was responsible for closing schools. I had nothing to do.
I mean, let's
get down to the facts.
You're not the head of a school board.
Exactly.
But a lot of schools were closed. There was a lot of remote learning.
Right.
It went on for, in some jurisdictions for the better part of 2 years.
Right, exactly.
And we've seen the impact. We've seen what's happened in terms of lower reading scores, lower
Absolutely.
Math scores. I mean, who knows the psychological impact.
Right.
I mean, it was a steep cost.
It was. The most important thing is to protect the children.
So is there a lesson here, future pandemics, that one thing is more of a focus on that, is how can we protect the kids and get them back to school?
Exactly.
More quickly.
Do both. And the way you do that, you get the people who interact with the children to be vaccinated and masked. You provide ventilation in the schools. You try to keep them in the schools safely. The most important thing is to protect the children.
Hard to argue with any of that, but boy, I'm telling you, bring out Fauci's name, and depending on what side of the political aisle you're sitting on, it will emit an immediate reaction. All right. By the way, I was thinking about this last night. It was a very morbid thought. And it's not out of the realm of possibility. Could you imagine if at this point, Dr. Fauci, CDC, Joe Biden, regardless of who it was, steps to the podium and says, well, I have some distressing news, but a COVID variant is back and it is sweeping the globe. And we're going to have a repeat of what we had 2.5 years ago with lockdowns and businesses shutting down and the schools shutting down and really all of that swell stuff that you remember from 2020 and 2021. We're going to have to go through it again. I think there would be a certain number of people who would just jump off cliffs. I think there would be a certain number of people who would go, fuck it, I don't care. If it gets me, it gets me. I'm not going back to wearing a mask and shutting things down. And I'm not sure, maybe you own a hardware store, so I'm not shutting down my hardware store. I'm going out to dinner if I feel like it, and I'm just, fuck it. You know, that's it. Just fuck it. I'm going on with my life. There'd be probably a small percentage of people, I would think, that would go, okay, if we got to do it again, we got to do it again. What choice do we have? But I think you'd lose a lot of people right off the top where people would just say, I am not going through this again. Like I said, morbid thought here on a Monday, but it sort of leads into my next point and my next clip, because my question is, what happens when we do face another situation like this? It is probably inevitable. Hopefully it won't happen in our lifetimes or our children's and grandkids' lifetimes. But what if it does? Are we in any better position, not only in this country, but just worldwide? Did we learn anything? Did we prepare differently? Are we prepared differently for future pandemics? Or is this one of these things where you bend over and grab your ankles and just take it like a man? In other words, after 9/11, we found out that we had agencies not talking to one another, two-way radios that didn't work, and all we weren't prepared. We scrambled the fighter jets way too late. We didn't have a plan in place. Airports were very vulnerable. Cockpits were vulnerable. And then after 9/11, we learned all that, and we're like, okay, so now things are different. And you got to believe, Jesus, I hope so, that the government has systems and policies in place now where if anything like that ever happens again, where somebody comes after us in a coordinated, highly coordinated, very effective effort, that we're in a better position to deal with it. You see what I'm saying? And the reason I sort of lead from that into this is because I think it's a similar situation. You're going to hear Chris Christie, Maggie Haberman, who has written an incredible book about the Trump presidency, New York Times reporter, very well respected. If you're on the other side of the political line, you probably thumb your nose at her, or maybe you don't even know who she is because you are not exposing yourself to opinions and information that runs counter to your beliefs. And in her case, they're not opinions. She's reporting facts. And even though initially when she says something, people go, oh, her again. She's just, it's funny, like 3 or 4 weeks later, you're watching, for example, the January 6th hearings, and it's like, oh, three Republicans in a row who were in the Trump White House all confirming what Maggie Haberman said. But this clip has more to do with what's going to happen in the future. And we don't know, by the way. But I've been talking about this. A lot of people have been talking about this quietly, behind the scenes, without a lot of fanfare. There has been tremendous movement engineered primarily by the Republican Party to bolster their chances of winning in the future, even though those chances might be altered, shall we say, in ways that may not necessarily be in the best interests of all Americans. Here's the clip from This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
Many of these election deniers get elected in 2022. That's going to mean a lot for 2024.
I think that is the story that really is actually not getting a ton of attention, both for voters and I think just with the crush of information that's happening right now, particularly in the post-Dobbs decision era for Democrats. But look, the impact of 2022 is going to be in Secretary of State's in various places, congressional candidates who are going to be approving of the next election and voting to certify it in 2024. I think this is where the focus has been for Democrats or had been for Democrats, and it has moved off it in a lot of ways, but it is going to sneak up on people next year.
And George, I'd say two things. One, I think the January 6th committee, despite some of the really good work they've done, and I agree with Julie on some of the bringing out of facts that they've done, was resigned to having a credibility problem because of the membership of the committee and the way that was done. And so there are lots of Republicans across this country who just say, there's nobody there to argue the other side. Kinzinger and Cheney don't argue the other side to the extent that there is some arguments there.
I think that
you can question a lot of these witnesses who came up and test their credibility, Donna.
Bill Barr? You're going to test the credibility of the former attorney general? You're going to test the credibility of the people who were inside the Oval Office
there are a lot
advising
people.
The president? You're going to test the credibility?
Donna, you want to just keep talking? Or you want me to give the answer?
What is the other side?
You can test the credibility of people, and by doing that, it can give them more credibility. But instead, it's a TV production.
Yeah, you're going to test the credibility of the cops their heads smashed in.
That's not who I'm testing, Donna, but there are lots of people inside the White House who now have convenient memories about things that didn't have memories about them before. You can ask questions about that. But the second point is this, that the reason this isn't breaking through with voters in 2022 is because Donald Trump's not on the ballot. You know, in the end, what the January 6th committee has made this all about is Donald Trump and his role in January 6th. Absolutely appropriate to make it about that. But when he's not on the ballot, it's very hard for Democrats to be able to make this a cutting issue, especially in the light of huge inflation, gas prices, crime in the streets, open borders, drug overdoses. Those things are things that are affecting people's everyday lives, and they don't see it that way. Now, if Donald Trump's on the ballot in 2024, then this becomes a whole different matter.
I'll tell you one thing. If I were a Republican, I'd be really, really happy to have Chris Christie out front making my case. And again, the Republican Party is split into two right now. You got the Trump people, and then you got the Republicans. And Christie is not one of the Trump people. But boy, that guy handles himself well. And you know, a former prosecutor, a lawyer, so he knows how to turn things and twist things around. But that was a very, very spirited exchange we had right there. That's the sort of stuff that people want to see, not just sitting there looking all nice and pretty and your hair and your makeup is done and you just sit there and you read off a few sentences in a prearranged fashion. No, give us some shit where people are screaming at one another. That's what we like, and that's where you get somewhere too. You got to pull out the stops and really argue the points. But as much as I would like Chris Christie out front working for me if I were a Republican, I'd much rather have Maggie Haberman on the other side reporting the facts for my side. That chick is unbelievable. Go, Maggie, go. All right, you got a Monday Night Football game on ESPN tonight. The Los Angeles Chargers hosting the Denver Broncos. That's a snoozer. All of the late night shows are in repeats tonight. Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, James Corden, Seth Meyers. I wonder if that's because, well, today is supposed to be a holiday. Columbus Day or President's Day or something like that. I wonder if they're off for the week. Hold on, let me check. No, James Corden is back, and that's it. Everybody else is off for the week. Well, I know what some of it is. Some of it is getting ready for the November sweeps. May and November are the 2 months where they take the TV ratings, and so everybody really, really loads up the shows with big stars and lots of stuff. So a lot of them take, they all coordinate this stuff. They take the week off, and this is really them prepping for all the stuff you're going to see next month when they take the ratings. But also you get the baseball playoffs too, and a lot of those games run long, and I'm sure there's other elements in there too that I haven't even thought of yet. All right, birthdays today. Felicity Jones did a great job portraying Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the basis of sex. Good movie, by the way. She's 39 today, and a handsome female. Eminem is 50. Ziggy Marley, 54. Mike Judge, Office Space. Beavis and Butthead, King of the Hill, 60 today. George Wendt from Cheers. Jason Sudeikis, his nephew, by the way. George Wendt, though, 74 from Cheers. Michael McKean, Lenny Kozlowski, Laverne and Shirley, and also the Spinal Tap lead guitarist, David St. Hubbins. This is Spinal Tap. I just start laughing thinking about it. All right. A man who says he's allergic to his own semen gets sick whenever he orgasms. Fortunately, he's married, so he never gets sick. Or it's like the woman who said, she's sitting there having lunch with her girlfriend, and she says, you know, I never told you this, but every time I sneeze, I have an orgasm. She says, what? She goes, yeah, every time I sneeze, I have an orgasm. She goes, wow. She says, are you taking anything for it? She says, yeah, pepper. Hi-yo! And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Monday, October 17th, 2022 is in the can, 22 days until the midterms. Watch out, cover your plants. Well, you're going to have probably bring the plants in, even though temperatures will moderate here in a couple of days. You're looking at a hard freeze. Take that shit seriously. We are here every weekday morning, right about this time, just after 7 o'clock is when we post. Here at jcontheline.com, we do politics really only when it's unavoidable, and sometimes it is. Email me, jc at jcontheline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with JC Corcoran. Spread the word, please, that we are here. A lot of people still don't know about our podcast every morning, and if you tell them, then they'll know. Maybe we'll get some more folks to join in, and that always helps. Have yourself a great Monday. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.